The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. Mike Hoss, Jeff Nowak with you until 7 o'clock tonight. We'll have Cooper Manning in the 5 o'clock hour, Brock Rayford, a BMX contestant in the X Games in the 6 o'clock hour. But we are now joined by Mike Triplett, Saints reporter for NewOrleans.football, as camp gets underway officially on the 28th with the pre-camp pressers. And then Wednesday's the first practice. They don't go to pads until August 3rd. How are you, Mike? Welcome to the show.
Good. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So I will ask you the first question. We had Seth Lewis on yesterday. So I'm always, Tuesday is going to be the pressers. It's whatever happens in the pressers. And Wednesday, the story might be, well, it's just camp is opened, right? It's just the first word, they're back. And who's there? Who's maybe not there? Who's on the field? Maybe not on the field. But when you get your opportunity, and it's time to do your first story that you want to do on X, is it a position battle? Is it a person? Do you know what that story is already? Where are you thinking that first story's going?
Yeah, my answers are going to be probably pretty basic here. But, I mean, the first thing is Alvin Kamara on the team? That's my first big curiosity. I don't think it's the most important factor for this team this season, but when you're talking day one, we will probably have the answer before day one, I assume. I've been wrong a lot on that topic so far, though. I have no idea why they're dragging their heels the way they are. But then the other one is, I want to see Jordan Tyson. You know, he's the shiny new toy, the highest draft pick in 18 years, and we didn't get to see him basically at all during OTAs and minicamp. They've assured us that they're just, you know, being smart, making sure he doesn't have any setbacks early in the offseason so he can be full go in training camp. Well, now I want to see him full go in training camp. I want to see Tyler Shott throwing to Chris Olave and Jordan Tyson and the offense. That's number one that I can't wait to see.
You know, I've been asked this question a few times, and I've struggled to come up with an answer, but I'm curious what your answer would be. What would a successful rookie season look like for Jordan Tyson? Like, at the end of the year, you look back and you see this, and it's a success. Like, what would that be to you?
Well, yeah, expectations don't have to be too high. I mean, we followed the Offensive Rookie of the Year race very closely last year because we were curious if Tyler Shough might win it. And what, Tet McMillan just barely got to 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns, and that won him the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year. So that's even quite an accomplishment to get to 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. So I think that's absolutely possible for him. I think if he played 17 games, it would be almost disappointing if he didn't reach those numbers. But, you know, we're not talking about it needs to be Odell Beckham Jr.'s rookie year or anything for that to be a good draft pick. But I'd like it to be 15 games at least. And I'd like it to be, he is a, you know, a legitimate number one or number two receiver who is, you know, thinking back in Saints past, like it's got to be better than like what Robert Meacham did early in his career. I mean, he has to look like, He doesn't have to come in right away and change everything, but he has to look like they hit on the pick. And to me, that would be, it'd be great if he would play at least 15 games, and it'd be great if he was, over 900 yards and, six touchdowns at least.
Yeah, the funny thing, you bring up Odell Beckham. I remember vividly because I was living up in, Giants land at that point. And Odell Beckham's career started with 4 games missed due to a hamstring injury. So that would be an interesting comparison. But we talked about this yesterday, and I was kind of in the same boat. Like, for me, the yardage, the touchdowns is whatever. I need him to be on the field. Like, because I think the worst case scenario is we come out of his rookie season and we're still talking about, can he be healthy at the NFL level?
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
And I think there's a few other players on the offense that I have the same kind of questions about, and they're in the running back room. And so, like, you talk about Alvin Kamara, is he going to be on the team? What is your read on everyone else in that room? Because I look at a Kendre Miller, and it's just like, there's talent there, but he can't stay on the field. And then I see a guy in Devin Neal who, is teetering on the brink of being, well, he's an injury-prone guy, too. He just every time seems like you expect to see something from him. He's not there. He's like a hamstring or whatever. Like, what is your read on that situation in the running back room?
Well, a lot of that depends on Alvin Kamara, right? So if you have Travis Etienne and you have Alvin Kamara, then everyone else is Lanyap, right? I mean, cool if Devin Neal continues his development. Cool if Audric Estime sticks around and contributes a little. Awesome if Kendre Miller finally stays healthy. But, you know, they're all fighting for scraps if you have the top two guys on the field. If they do decide to move on from Alvin Kamara, they've all of a sudden turned the depth in that position into a huge area of concern. So I feel like, if they're treating it like, they don't need Alvin Kamara on this team, they don't seem to want Alvin Kamara on this team, that's all fine. You know, you can make cold, calculated decisions like that with 31-year-old running backs. It's happened throughout the history of the NFL. But what's plan B? Is plan B just Kendre Miller and Devin Neal? That would scare me.
And it wouldn't surprise. I mean, obviously, like when we were talking about the opening at camp and that first day, I think he's going to be there. I think he's going to be there in late August. Then you look at the running back room and go, okay, now who's in the room? Because now the decision is it different? Did Kendre come through okay? Did Devin Neal come through okay? Or did Audric Estime come through okay? I feel like they got some time because of the Kendre Miller history. Now, if you kind of roll the dice like that and they get hurt, you're still paying, right? You know, maybe it's not season ending. I'm not hoping anybody gets hurt. I'm just saying then Alvin becomes right. – The leverage can go one or two ways on this thing. So I just feel like it's – you don't have to answer right away. He can be on this team July 29th, but where's his situation on August 29th?
Yeah, and look, there's also the possibility that maybe they get the trade phone call that they never got before because someone else's situation changes. And I mean, he's an asset right now that they're not in a hurry to get rid of, but if he's going to play for the Saints this year, I think that affects the offense you install. I mean, he didn't show up for OTAs in minicamp. They kept him sidelined and told him just to watch. It's like, if there's a chance he's going to play for this team, I would like to start designing the offense with him in mind. I mean, I would think he's a guy who could still catch 50 passes for this team this year, and that's not going to be what Devin Neal does, and maybe not what Kendre Miller does or not be able to count on consistently. So it's just a weird play. It's a weird thing to not have, hey, this is what we're doing and let's go forward with it before the start of training camp.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Michael, I do want to switch sides of the ball because I know you spent a good chunk of time talking with Saints defensive coordinator Brandon Staley during the offseason. It's the defensive side. We've talked a lot about the offense. There's been a lot of investment in the offense, whether it was the draft, whether it was free agency. The same can't be said for the defensive side of the ball. They made a couple additions, one out of necessity in Caden Ellis, a couple depth players. But by and large, this is the same group coming back, at least from a starting perspective, from last year. And I think the defense got protected at times because the offense was so non-productive that they didn't face a lot of teams that were trying to lay it on them. Like, I look back at that Rams game, they could have put up 50 if they wanted. Seahawks could have put up 50 if they wanted. They didn't have to. I do wonder, what are your expectations for year two under Brandon Staley? And – is it fair to be a little concerned? Am I overplaying that? Like, where do you land?
No, I think you make a really good point because, first of all, I was very impressed by Brandon Staley last year. I mean, I think he was a great addition for this team, certainly for all the edge rushers. We know how Cam Jordan and Chase Young performed under him and how they spoke about him. And now he's got a couple new guys to work with, and Tyree Wilson and Anfernee Jennings, Carl Granderson there. Like, I think whatever you think of that level of talent in that room, I think he has put them in very good position to succeed, and his defense is good for those guys. We know Elante Taylor loved playing in it probably more than he had in previous systems. He's gone now, but DeMario Davis was energized by how he played. You know, I mean, I think he's a good, and he got so much out of the young guys, Jonas Sanger, Quincy Riley, et cetera. So I do believe in him as a coach, but you're absolutely right. I would say they probably overachieved a bit last year, and then they did not get noticeably better through personnel. So, you know, they're going to be asking a lot of him again. They're going to be asking a whole lot, the secondary in particular. I mean, Kool-Aid McKinstry has to be on number one now. And Jonas Sanger has to be really good in that star role. And Julian Blackman has to stay healthy. And Quincy Riley has to be a number two corner. And, I mean, they've all shown us they can do it. But there's a huge burden on all those guys right now, just to be as good as they were last year. And they were probably, you know, their overachieving last year made them a middle of the pack defense, not an elite defense.
When you look at position battles, I mean, some of them are different. The wide receiver battle is going to be interesting. It's really just about numbers. You're going to, if you end up with four or five, you're going to be happy with those guys. Running back, kind of the same way. Offensive line, you know, to me, because these backups that you have now are guys that played for you last year. But on that, in that secondary, not really safety, but a cornerback, that's a position battle beyond Martin Emerson Jr. that just feels like there's depth need there. It's a kind of a weird position battle because they're not, yeah. There's no depth there now. I feel like that can change, but I'm kind of like you. Where Kool-Aid and Quincy, you know, I guess what? You're 1-2. Go get him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Isaac Adams there, and he's kind of the definition of sort of replacement-level player. I mean, it wouldn't change my prediction if the Saints going to win a loser game if Yadam got thrown in there here and there. But I do think... I do think the two big factors that really have to work are, you know, Sanker and Blackman. I think I felt a lot better about this team, actually, when I realized that was their plan. Because if Sanker is an asset in that star position and that's how they can use his skill set, I'm really intrigued by that. And I think Blackman is actually a really good underrated player that they found last year, but obviously he needs to prove he can stay healthy. If that's true and the cornerback two position becomes the fifth most important position in the secondary, then I think they can scrape by. But it's just, yeah, they all have to work. Kool-Aid has to be really good. Sanger has to be really good. Reed and Blackman have to be really good. And then you can get by with those other options at corner. But that's a lot of ifs, and that's a lot of, you know. It's kind of my fear with this team overall. I think there's a ton of optimism around this team right now, and I think it's totally fair. I like their starting 22 a lot. I think they've rebuilt very quickly. But I think we could list eight players. What if this player missed 10 games? What if this player missed 10 games? And all of a sudden you feel really worried.
Yeah, I agree with you on Sanker. And to me, it's like, if I want him to win the job, and it's like, okay, I could put him in a competition. I could take half the reps away from him. Or I could just say, hey, we're going to give you all the reps. We're going to get you as ready as possible for the season, and we're going to see what you can do with it, because it's the opposite of what happened to Elante Taylor. I think Elante Taylor in his second year was kind of set up to fail because they put him on the outside. They had him competing with Paulson Adebo, and so he's spending all his time out there. He's getting second-team reps in the slot, and then all of a sudden at the end of camp, you're like, okay, Bradley Roby's gone. You're in the slot now. And then halfway through the season, he's outside again. I like the idea of them just committing to a plan in the slot, even if it means like, hey, okay, with the competition, every position's a competition. Well, I also just want this guy to be as ready as possible, because whether you like it or not, he's going to struggle at points, but you need him to at least feel like, hey, I have the background where I'm ready.
Yeah, they really kind of did that across the board, too. OTAs and minicamp, we didn't see a single position where they were saying, hey, this is a competition. Riley took every snap at cornerback, too. Werner took every stop at linebacker ahead of Stutzman. The starting offensive line was the starting offensive line. I mean, they were not doing a lot of that every other day stuff, rotation stuff. you know, Julian Blackman took every snap as the number two safety. I mean, they really did say this is our plan, and we're going to give everybody all the reps. We'll find out. I mean, we'll find out if that's the right approach or not. But it was notable for sure.
Yeah, and just training camps coming up, which is like dark horse season. You know, do you have any early picks for dark horse candidates to make the roster that maybe people aren't talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, two guys that nobody's talking about at all are the two undrafted rookie offensive tackles that they signed, Alan Heron, and the other one's name is escaping me right now.
What,
that's how dark horse they
is
are. That I've been
Walschlager?
Yeah, Walschlager. Yeah. Alex Walschlager. But they gave them the two highest guaranteed money amounts of any of their undrafted rookies. They didn't draft an offensive tackle. They let Landon Young leave. They didn't re-sign him this offseason. So there's a need, there's an opportunity, and they invested heavily in those two guys. So I've kind of got, you know, my projected 53-man roster, and you know, has sort of a penciled-in spot for whichever one of those guys stands out most. And obviously, we're not going to be talking about them from OTAs and minicamp because, you know, all they do is 7-on-7, and then when they do walk through 11-on-11, we're not seeing them perform. So we don't really have opinions made on either guy.
Well, it begins soon enough. I hope you get a little bit of time off between now and the 28th, and then it'll be just full at it for 6 months and hopefully longer. As always, appreciate your time. Look forward to hanging out at camp, as we will do not too far away. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Mike Triplett, Saints reporter for NewOrleans.com, NewOrleans.football.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.